This is CliffCentral.com.
Adrian Groenewald, this is the Leadership Transformation Platform, 12 to 3 every day, but the first hour is a Leadership Masterclass, and the first half hour, the Leadership Master Lesson, which Edward Kiswetta and Benny Anderson just shared with us. And we really can talk about those issues much, much more. Go download that podcast, How to Lead Better or Think Better or Process Better in this linear and non-linear world that we find ourselves in. And are we seeing it? Are leaders seeing it? Are managers and leaders having the right conversations in this world we find it? I don't think so. I think we're having worse conversations than we did in the past in many instances. But now Edward Kiswetta, with us in the studio until recently, for I think about 5-6 years, you were the CEO of Alexander Forbes. Before that, very prominent at SAS, I think it was. So you've had an interesting career, very interesting career. Maybe summarize your lessons at Alexander Forbes, 2, 3, 4 key lessons you learned. There's probably a 100 of them. I know you kicked off with this amazing letter to the staff. You ended off with a great letter. And as is the corporate environment, it's never easy to exit maybe, but it's a new phase of your life. So what do you take away from Alexander Forbes' experience?
I think you mentioned early on that we employ lots of actuaries, and that's quite important, that having the core technical skills to do the work you do is important, and one should never trivialize that. So having a top actuary as opposed to someone who thinks he's an actuary to do your modeling of, for example, a benefit based on mortality studies and lifestyle measures and all of that. You want to know that you've got a good actuary there that's technically competent. If you're going for surgery, Adrian, you want to know that your doctor, your surgeon is the top, he's in the top 5 or 3% of his of his discipline in the world.
You'll wait if you have to, if you can.
Absolutely. When we ran power stations, we didn't want power station operators who was creative about how they would start up the power station this morning. There's a set way to do it, and if you don't obey the laws of physics, you'll blow the thing up. But what I realized, Alexander Forbes probably cemented that for me, it's always been my approach, is very often in leadership situations, we focus on the what rather than the why. And the hard questions in life are the why questions, not the what questions. If I ask you, you know, what car you drive, you'll tell me a BMW, a Mercedes, an Uno. And it's a very short answer. It's a specific answer. Where did you buy it? You can tell me. How much did you pay for it? You can tell me. Then I ask you, why did you buy a BMW? And then you'll start fumbling because you actually don't have an answer other than it was an emotional, some thought, some, you know,
midlife
subconscious,
crisis.
Even a midlife
crisis. Or you don't
crisis.
Want to be honest about it.
Or you're not honest about it. So the why questions are important. And for me, the most important lesson that Alexander Forbes just clarified for me again is leading an organization, you have to be clear about why that organization exists. What is its ultimate and its highest purpose rather than what it does? The second lesson for me was, if you don't know what you stand for, you fall for anything. And so what I needed to be very clear on early on in my leadership tenure at Alexander Forbes, and I was confronted with wonderful opportunities, is to ask myself, what do I stand for? And how do I live up to that before I seek to comply with what the board wants from me, what I think staff wants from me, what I think, you've got 4 stakeholders at least, and I can add others. So as a leader, I have my clients, I have my staff, I have the community, I have the shareholders, I have regulators. So whose hymn sheet do I sing to?
You have the media as well.
Then you have people like Ilias, you know, who kind of watch you and quote you out of context.
The reporters.
So who do you listen to? If you don't know what you stand for, you are in trouble.
Yeah, whoever's the loudest will pull you to.
But most importantly, are you prepared to die for that? Because if something is not worth dying for, it's not worth living for. And a leader must have that conviction that, you know, if I'm fired for doing this, that's fine. Because I am guided by what I stand for with that conviction and not by manipulating a particular outcome. And so that was an important lesson that I... And then I think very important, and probably more important in knowledge-based organizations such as Alexander Forbes and the financial service industry, as opposed to factories, is people matter. There's no such thing as Alexander Forbes. Alexander Forbes is a piece of paper, you know, written in terms of, you know, a memorandum of understanding, an act. The real Alexander Forbes are the moment of truth that is created all the time, in real time, by 4,500 people. And very often we don't connect sufficiently with those. So how do we create moments of truth? How do we create human moments? Or do you just send out instructions from your office? Do you just look at policies and procedures? Or do you go out and connect with people? And so for me, those are important. Let me just pause there for a moment. Let me just summarize the three that I mentioned. I think the first is just this notion that you have to be clear what the purpose is of the endeavor. The second is you have to be authentic to something which you're prepared to die for. And thirdly, you have to understand that people matter above everything else.
All right, very powerful there. I know so often when I speak to leaders when they've been in a very strong leadership position for a while, even Thuli Madonsela a week or two back, who she happened to mention you as well. She's learned some lessons from you, regards you as a friend. She mentioned that, you know, this thing about hindsight. Now hopefully we look at my job at Alexander Forbes with hindsight. I should have. And then next time you get a new responsibility, you actually learn from that and you do what you learn. For example, she said she wished she'd gone in there and changed things faster. Or I can't remember exact words, but I've heard leaders say, I should have changed things faster. I should have moved quicker. Do you have any of those feelings when you look at it back now? One shouldn't shoot on yourself, as a wise American old lady told me one day. Never shoot on yourself. But what should you have done faster? Is there anything that you would have done differently that you could take with you into the next challenge that you face?
I think focusing on what you've learned is more important from what are the regrets I have and what should I have done, because you've done your best at the time that you were, you've used the information that you have. On reflection, I think what one always wished you can do more of is to connect with people more. Very often a leader has his own performance or her own performance anxieties. You want to do well. You have this conviction. Having a conviction which you're not able to communicate, having a conviction that you're not able to have others inspired by, it doesn't matter how noble your conviction is, doesn't matter how clear you are in what you're wanting to achieve. If you're not able to inspire people, then you've lost the plot. And I feel, and if I reflect even on my own, sometimes we are so committed to achieve what we've set out that we run the risk of leaving people behind. And then you have to have mindfulness to constantly slow down and say, let me just take some time out and reconnect with people, put the agenda aside, put the strategic plan aside, you know, put the P&L and the balance sheet aside and just spend some time, reconnect with people. People don't remember what you tell them. They remember how you've made them feel. And if we as leaders can connect with people and make them feel valued, involved, important, needed, you can conquer the earth. And so for me, that's one of the things I would always try and do better.
Where are you from? Yeah, very quickly tell us here, and then Ellis and Louis jump in.
I have a question for
you. Yeah, just tell us where are you from here, and then also, you know, those leadership lessons you learned there, maybe you guys can come in on that as well. Where are you from here?
So the main thrust behind my decision was lifestyle. I wanted a more balanced life. You know, my family lives between South Africa and Singapore, and I needed a bit more time. And the demands of a chief executive obviously requires you to be present. And so that was the main drive. But also, having made the choice, it created the opportunity for me to do other things. I've always had the passion for education and leadership. And some time ago, I got involved with Da Vinci Institute of Technology. In fact, took a personal investment into it. Ben and I are partners in owning the business. But Da Vinci creates that platform for me to do the work that I love. In fact, to do the work I think I was born to do, which is to teach. At heart, that's what I am.
Yeah, at heart, you're a teacher.
And then secondly, I think they to start something, you know, from scratch again. I've spent my whole life taking situations and turning it around, whether it was Eskom, whether it was First Rand Bank, SARS, or Alexander Forbes. Almost always when I got there, it was in trouble. It needed some turnaround, and that played to my core strength. What I have this desire for is to create something out of nothing. And this world of disruptive technologies and of innovation is where I want to be a full-time scholar over the next few years.
Okay. Alice?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting the observation that you made earlier about how Edward looks now, you know, and I can make the same observation. He's much more relaxed, at ease. And I have this funny question. Why would you have not been this way at Alexander Forbes? And that question evolves around what structure, environment does to you as an individual in relation to where you see yourself and where you see your capabilities. Because what has changed? But the new Edward has come out. The real Edward has come out. Is that right?
Well, I'm not sure that the real Edward hasn't always been there. I think my context has changed. My performance contract has changed. Mm-hmm. Leadership is an inordinate privilege. And one never takes that lightly. But it also has it exacts very clear accountability on you. And that does bring about a particular focus, a particular way.
Does it constrain you actually a bit sometimes?
Ultimately it does, Adrian. Ultimately it does. But remember, constraints aren't a bad thing. You know, if you were unconstrained on the road, you'd end up, you know, like a rubber ball against the building. So,
because what I also hear Ella saying, if it's
a question I could ask myself.
But if you let yourself go more,
but
maybe,
I,
you know.
But at the moment, I sit here, I have no accountability for 4,500 people at Alexander Forbes. I don't have the accountability for the few million clients that follows me on Twitter that tells me you've buggered up again, you know, or on
email.
So
this is your new context.
So the point is, I do not have all of the inputs and the accountabilities that I take seriously and try and live up to. Now, that is not to be confused with being unauthentic, but it is about being clear about what you're held accountable for. Mm-hmm. Today, I have a small sphere of accountability. They're not unimportant, but certainly I'm not expecting a Twitter every day, a tweet every day telling me that a call center of the insurance business have messed up or some pensioner didn't get their fund. I have to just account to my wife and my children, my immediate family, and then to my business partner. And even this is great because Ben runs the institute on a day-to-day basis. I have the luxury of popping in and disrupting him.
Maybe just for a future conversation, Adrian, we have to look into this question of what structure the environment does to how you become. Because I too have gone through my own evolution, you know, leaving a newspaper and starting my own venture. You know, the environment is redefining who possibly I was or should have been way.
But Alice, I think I want to come in there also. That's why I believe we must put more focus on leadership as something that talks to an individual and not to this individual within a structure.
Absolutely.
Because if my leadership understanding is defined, that will inform the structure. Mm-hmm. Now, it's an old principle, you know, form and structure, function and form. Well, I think we must clarify, you know, who are we, and then let that infuse society. We still have a society which dictates to you how you should be in a certain context. And I think, unfortunately, we say, that's okay, you expect me to do X, Y, and Z, I will do that. I wish we could get to a point of saying, I'm not interested in doing that anymore. And if it doesn't suit you, well, get to someone else who will play towards that structure.
Sure.
And I think if you talk about leadership, I'm preparing for a conference presentation, Leadership Beyond 2030. Well, that will not be in recognition of the structure. It would say, who are you without, or who are you taking, not even need to take into account what is the structure? Because I think structure does bring some benefits, we may argue. I say from a leadership perspective, I don't think there are much benefits.
Oh, how can you even have a theme that says leadership beyond 2030? I mean, that to me is just a weird question, because we can't even think 5 years from now. It's
this
world.
If we can see the future.
Ooh, I don't know.
But if we're bounded in the structure, we won't see it.
Okay, Louis, very quickly, and come back to Edward.
We believe strongly that movement is about integration of motivation, direction, and structure. So we tend to go and build structure, and then we support the structure. Yes. Afterwards, we are ruled by the structure. Yes. What both are saying here is very important, and that is, if you don't know what you stand for in terms of values, it's an old concept, but believe me, you must be passionate and prepared to die for it. I agree with that fully. Then you will be prepared to adapt the structure and not serve the structure. Because structure is supposed to serve your motivation as well.
But leadership as it stands, what we've done is reverse engineer the person into the structure to define what their leadership is.
That's because you don't know what you stand for.
Because you don't know the why.
If you know what your why is, your motivation, then you won't allow the structure to determine who you are and what you should do.
Mm-hmm. Or you know who you are, but you prepare to put it on the back burner.
Yes. Yeah. For corporate...
And you lose the spot.
And that's very, very important. But it's, again, it's not an either or. So, you know, the scripture says to whom much has been given, much is expected.
Yeah.
Now, this is not a free ride. If you're a CEO, it's not a free ride. You can't just do what you want to. Now, there's a difference between doing what you want to and being who you are. Yeah. I'm just saying is you have to be who you are. You can't define yourself as a title or as a role or as a corner office. Because then you will begin to behave like that. You know, and all stress comes from having a lived life which is incongruent with who you actually are. And if there's great congruity, then you don't have any stress. But I am differentiating being your authentic self in the role that you are and not necessarily serving slavishly the structure or the demands of shareholders, of a board, or of clients, slavishly or uncritically, from also accepting that in this position, I have been employed to do certain things, to perform at a particular level. Now, while I can choose how I do that and why I do that, I cannot get away from the fact that I still have to earn my keep.
But you see how positions, and even President Zuma's position, has just totally flawed him. So here's a man who's, let's say, a man of the people. That's what brought him there.
Is that flawed, F-L-O-O-R-E-D or F-L-A-W-E-D?
O-O-R-E-D.
Okay. Because our flaws pre-exist before we enter the position.
So, what I'm saying...
But the structure can bury you.
That's what I'm saying.
What you're referring to.
The structure brings it out. Circumstances does not maketh a man. Circumstances simply reveals him.
But your protocol and your structure and your rules and regulations can bog you down if you don't stand for something. So, I mean, his power has been when he just stops spontaneously at a police station or a school, or when you can just do things instinctively, spontaneously, unknown.
Without calculating.
But you almost... I think, Mandela did that. Mandela had moments where he still did that, where he went around the structure and bureaucracy because he stood for something really, really specifically. If you're a leader and you don't know what your motivation is, and your organization's why as well, motivation, and you don't know the direction, then the structure will suck you in, and the bureaucracy and the systems and procedures and the laws and regulations and the corporate governance will totally take over from you.
But Adrian, I want to say on that one, it's interesting, if you look, just there's a wonderful book out on the most influenced leaders of the 1800s. It's fascinating to see those people were not in structures. So it's also a matter of asking, if I'm the leader, why do I need to go into structure? Because I hope that we can create for the future purposes, in particularly in our socioeconomic context, a need from people not to necessarily abide to structure.
Or redefine what structure is.
If we want to drive the socioeconomic reality and we can get more entrepreneurs and more owner managers, I hope that we can see more people defining where they want to go, and in doing so, pulling society behind them or with them, as opposed to say, we need a big man. Many people are saying to Edward recently, well, you know what, now where can we use Edward? My hope for him is that he's not being used anywhere. He doesn't need to be used anywhere.
abused anyway. Yeah.
So a quick question for both of you before you run out of time.
And then we need to end, yeah.
How do we then let the real authentic leader of the future emerge? Especially when we're still confined within the classroom structure.
Allow them to create the space themselves.
But I walked into a classroom a couple of weeks ago and I cringed because it's a hall full of people who are just sitting to listen to me.
Yes.
And when are we going to see a classroom where people are standing up, interacting, and doing all kinds of crazy
things? If you come to Da Vinci, you'll find those classrooms.
Okay, we'll have a date.
All right, Edward, we end with a leadership inspiration thought under the Sibanye executive almost. And I want to give you that honor to just share a final, very brief leadership thought for leaders out there. And then we must have you back and talk about some other things that we definitely skipped today.
I mean, there are many leadership thoughts I can give, but right now, I think there's a word that says, you know, when you're confronted with darkness, you don't fight the darkness, you add light. And I think leaders must be light bearers. They must be torch bearers. The world will not become a better place. We will have to become wiser. And I distinctly separate knowledge from wisdom. The world has no deficiency. It has an overabundance. Knowledge is ubiquitous. It's everywhere. You can Google it. But we live in a world that is deficient of wisdom. Mm. And wisdom is about not knowing only what to do, but ultimately what is the highest intent that you seek to serve. And so I would invite every young leader today to discover within themselves what is the highest leadership intent they wish to serve, as opposed to how do I serve myself best.
That's the words of and the voice of Edward Kiesvetter, former CEO of Alexander Forbes, now partner and president of Da Vinci Institute of Technology. That's the full name. And then our special guest also with him today, his partner in crime, Benny Anderson, who runs the Institute. So it's been wonderful having you gentlemen here. I mean, we have lots of leaders here, but there was absolute stimulating conversation.
I think we need part two and three.
Yeah, the frustration is that it feels to me like we kind of touched the surface.
Yeah.
Maybe we went a bit deeper.
There's a raw nerve here.
Yeah, maybe we did go a bit deeper than just the surface, but I think we can scratch much deeper. Next up, our business masterclass, which is all about measuring and reporting on compliance. And Richard Anger is going to lead us there. Last week, we spoke about all kinds of insurances you need as a SME or a small business. That was quite interesting. So that's what's next up. And of course, in the second half of the Business Masterclass, we have our special guest, an SME owner, Tsepo Moloi from Stockfella. So they've come with an app. They're disrupting the industry for Stockfella in South Africa. So that's what we're talking about a little bit later on. Stay with us. And of course, Kerry Lee Boucher from USB Ed will join us for the next hour.
This is CliffCentral.com.